G'day there. Welcome to a piece of the action on this beautiful but rather warm, sunny Sunday in Adelaide. Clayton in the hot seat, along with Sue Gilby and some special guests that we'll announce just shortly. But first up, an acknowledgement that this land is Kaurna land and the airspace as well. And we acknowledge the traditional owners of this territory, and they still have an ongoing connection to this place that we respect.
Hi, everybody. And that segues really well into what I think we want to talk about today. So we want to talk about a project that we're working on that we want to see come to fruition on Kaurna land, and that actually recognises the Kaurna people as the first people. So we have some guests in today, Ed Wilby and Sam Scammell. Hello.
Good day.
Both of you. Yeah. And thanks for coming in. And we've got a bit of an exciting project, I think, that that we can reveal that we've been working on and keeping a little bit under wraps, just because we had to get all sorts of permissions before and making sure it was okay with everybody, but we can pretty much talk about it now. And it's a project that we would love to see happen at the old Royal Adelaide Hospital in the heritage listed sites. So we'll start just by talking about that project, I think, and then we'll sort of weave into it why we're particularly involved. So Sam, would you like to start giving a bit of a rundown of what it is that we're doing?
Well, we're looking at setting up a foundation to basically tell the story. And we believe our whole lives and history is told through story, and we're looking to tell the story of both the original peoples and also the modern peoples. And by telling our stories to each other, that we can recreate that sense of community that we believe we've lost.
And Ed, from your perspective?
I guess I've been inspired by creating sort of ecological cities. And then when Sue came up with the idea of that we need to get our story right, of what it is that we want to create, that excited me, because part of it is creating a nurturing society and really sort of defining what is that all about. And Sue came up with the idea, well, let's get the story right. Let's look at the ancient, the indigenous people of the land, and combine their story with Western understanding of where we're going. And then hopefully out of that we can get a preferred future model that is more nurturing, not only for humans to satisfy the needs, but also the environment.
So it started off, as you say, Ed, something that we thought we would be able to inform people and educate, and all about a future story, really. But then when the possibility of the old hospital came up, the idea, we've sort of grown into it, really, haven't we?
Yeah, I agree. It's sort of like it's an opportunity that came up and presented itself, and luckily through Sue's connections, we were asked to present something.
And we haven't got it yet. We must say that we're making it sound like we're in there. We're not. We're just not. we don't even know if we can. But what we have decided now is that if it doesn't happen there, the idea is so good, it should happen. And it's essentially about a regenerative future, using regenerative technologies, but using the ancient mode of storytelling, and which was one of the ways that obviously the Kaurna people live by. And the whole concept, I think, of if you think of all of the stories that would be in that old hospital, it's really quite phenomenal. So from the first story, although Sam, do you want to give a rundown of the four storylines that we're looking at?
We're looking at it really from a time point of view. So essentially, how can we know where we're going or where we want to go until we actually understand where we've come from? And there's stories of the people who have actually been living in this place. So the first one is really from the original inhabitants, the Kaurna people, and really it goes back many, many thousands of years, as we all know, but until we understand and actually listen to their stories and understand where they've come from and what their experiences and their knowledge and wisdom are, we can't possibly move forward. Then secondly, we'd come to the what we might call a colonial story of Adelaide, with the first settlers here, their story, why they came, what they did when they got here.
Arriving at Port Misery.
Port Misery, yes. Yeah, that's, and, well, understanding why it's called Port Misery and how that informs how we live and relate to each other to this day. Then into what we might call the modern century, the modern story, the 20th century, all the so-called advantages of technology and the Western way of doing things, which has their benefits, but we need to understand why we've got the technologies we have, how that informs our own lives and the way we interact and relate to each other. And then finally, stories about the future. So how are we going to live together in this common place? How are we going to create? And I think it's important we take back responsibility for our own lives, and it's up to us to create our own futures, and we create those futures by telling the story. So it's not just the story of what has happened, but as we talk to each other and tell our stories about what we are doing and what we want to do, we are actually creating the whole new story anew.
It's a bit of a circle as well when you speak it like that, because obviously the first people here, their meanings and their culture was wrapped up in the stories that they told, and you know how things happened, how things got here, and all of that sort of stuff. And it's almost coming back to that kind of idea, isn't it? Except not quite in the cosmological way that some of their stories are. A bit more in the understanding our technology and our history.
I love that you say that, Clayton, because that's exactly what we're. That symbolism is huge. You know, the circle. The circle is such an important part of life, and it was for Aboriginal people, and it is still for us, about that whole circle of life.
I think it is, but I think it is also neglected.
Oh yes, yeah. But that you made that connection and said it's like the circle's coming round again, which is a beautiful thing, because it is all about regeneration.
Hmm. Well, maybe I've watched The Lion King with my grandkids recently.
Maybe. We're calling it a repository and an archive, and what we're hoping is that by it formalising the fact that we're taking these stories, that we're collecting these stories, by formalising that and using them to inform the future, it makes it more real, it makes it more tangible, and it also we'll be preserving them for. Ever. They've not ever been told, I don't know, that they've been told in this particular way of doing it. The stories have been told for sure, but I don't know that it's been pulled together in this way before. What do you think?
Well, I think that's exactly right. And it's not just about telling a story to each other. The reality is, by telling our stories, we are teaching ourselves, teaching each other. We're applying that wisdom that's contained there. And in fact, The original inhabitants, theirs was an oral tradition, and all of their knowledge and wisdom was passed on through storytelling. Mm. And storytelling can take many forms. It's not just sitting around the campfire telling a yarn. It's, it's dancing, it's music, it's... Mm. And in our modern society, we've got so many more opportunities to be able to tell those stories.
So we're combining ancient knowledge with contemporary technology.
And do I dare bring up the question of subversion? Because, you know, in Western society, it's usually our political leaders who get to choose how the stories are presented and what they mean and where we're aiming for. Are you saying it's time for people to take back that power?
I guess we're saying it's time that we told the true stories.
Mm-hmm. And combined with that, what's really in our hearts, though, we want to create a nurturing society, and we believe that the Indigenous people of the place have, 40, 70,000 years of knowledge and understanding of the place that we'd be fools not to pay attention to.
Not to understand at least some part of it. And, of course, you know, the questions they asked when they did things weren't, you know, what's this going to mean for my life? It's what this is going to mean for my grandchildren and their children, and
yep, 100%
what are the long-term impacts?
Mm.
Well,
something
yeah.
that we don't ask very often, I fear.
Mm. Well, not just future generations, but also country. It was all about sustaining and maintaining the country in its very broadest sense. So the country is not just the land, it's all the animals and plants and people that live on it and are sustained. And only through preserving, maintaining, sustaining country, and that's what a lot of the, well, most of the stories were about, how you go about making sure that the country was available to provide for future generations.
That's right, and part of what we want to do is establish a centre for unlearning, which is...
We're not going into Terry Pratchett at the moment, folks.
But it's a little bit of a different take on things because there's so much that we have to unlearn. I believe in continuous learning. I think it's you know, everybody needs to know that they don't know everything, and that it's a certainly as I get older, I know how much I don't know more than I do know, and so unlearning is something that we have to learn to do too, because we've not always been right in the way that we've done things. So by unlearning, we hopefully can learn anew and learn and be more open to other styles of learning.
I think some parts of that unlearning probably revolves around our habits. It's so easy to get into habits where you just do things in your daily life without even thinking about them.
Mm.
And the impacts of those things aren't always positive.
Yes.
But it's not all habit. Some of it is because people say it's the right thing to do, we just do it. And that, you know, if you look at things like the use of plastics, and if you look at all sorts of ways that we live with our takeaway society, we've got to unlearn all of that because the planet's just not going to be able to.
Well, what you're talking about is more than unlearning.
Pardon?
It's more than an unlearning that you're talking about as soon as you start approaching those kinds of, you know, large, unsustainable habits.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. We're not saying that it's just exclusively a centre for unlearning, but it is a centre for unlearning.
But Sue, would you also agree that part of it is understanding humans, how we can really love and appreciate ourselves so we can... have that same caring and respect for our natural environment, and then through that, hopefully head towards a combined or a common vision of what it is that we really want to create, and we believe it's creating a nurturing society. Mm. So that's the unlearning part of it. Is what does that mean? What are the habits we have to get into to express that?
Very much a consideration of not only your family, but the whole society, the animals, insects, etc., that live here and the land itself. That doesn't sound like the way a lot of people live.
And we've included that in the last point, in the dot points that we've put together that says actually what we're going to do. And I think it's up there as a very important point, is to acknowledge and respect our interconnectedness with all people and the earth.
Mm.
And yeah. That comes last, but it also comes first. And with the first is the establishing a historical record and a telling of a true history that respects the first Australians and acknowledges their importance, place and value within our society. And that first dot point and the last dot point are absolutely interconnected.
Mm.
So the point about the unlearning is actually it's not so much about unlearning as just remembering, because we did actually know all this stuff, and the traditional societies have known it and practice it for thousands of years. We've come along, and great modern clever apes that we are, we've sort of invented all this great stuff and decided we know it all, and we've headed off down this industrial commercial path, as a result of which we think we know a lot of stuff. Yeah, sure we do. We do know a lot of stuff. You can Google anything you like in the world and know stuff, but we don't have any wisdom or know how to use it or apply it. And what we've lost, and this is where I started to get involved in what we're doing here, is to me we've just lost that sense of connectedness, that sense of community. So you talk about habits. When I was growing up as a kid, they weren't habits, it was just the way we did things. You know, people didn't lock their back door. As kids, we grew up in the street. We played in the street. We knew everyone else in the same street. Nowadays, you could walk out the back door and you wouldn't know your neighbour, wouldn't even say hello to them and walk past them. So they're the, call them habits, but they're the ways we need to get back to just start reconnecting and building that nurturing society.
You know, hopefully go towards that. Sorry.
Yeah, well, nowadays, almost by preference, and I'm sure this is because we're told that this is the way it should be, but almost by preference, people go behind gates and fences, and they like to have little flickers that open doors, so they actually don't even need to see anybody when they're coming and going. And people gated, seem to prefer that style of living.
Well, that's the gated community.
The whole gated society is what we're about, not having.
But one of the problems is, of course, that the philosophy of the world around us is controlled by fear.
Mm.
You know, we get our self-esteem by buying things, Sue.
Mm.
You know, and I need the newest car, and I need the newest clothes, and the newest fashions, and the newest houses. And I'll fear my place in society if I don't get them.
Mm.
And that's unlearning for you. That's what we need to do, unlearn those things.
Well, and part of it's the way we design our cities to accommodate the automobile as a mode of transport, so that that's the infrastructure that's sort of provided, and so we get used to that. And so the question is there another way that we can satisfy our needs? And it could be redesigning or regenerating the existing built environment to be more lightly on the planet. And so the thinking is that we believe that we have the understanding, we have the knowledge through, you know, like the Living Building Challenge and many other aspects to know what direction we could go in terms of redesigning or in part unlearning the way we do things. And then to tap into the ancient knowledge of how they lived and balance and harmony with the environment and help to improve, to enhance that whole culture associated with the environment and their culture.
And so, lived according to to the land.
Yes.
And
that sensitivity to
that. That's something that we have to learn to do as well.
Yeah.
But the other thing that's a bit of breaking news that I think we should talk about before we play the first song is that we've partnered with a local community radio station. Guess which one?
So when you say we,
Clayton doesn't know that.
When you say we, who is we, or at least what? There is an organisation of some sort that's we partners.
Okay, you want me to talk to that? What we're proposing is to set up a not-for-profit, and I'll call it a community foundation. At this stage, we're calling it the Scene Foundation. Let's
just pronounce that and spell that. It's not S-C-E-N-E, and it's not where to be seen.
No,
yes, it is.
Well, it's not the scene.
No, it's not the scene.
It will
scene.
Be, though.
Yeah. It's actually an acronym, or at least at first instance. Ed,
the Social Entrepreneurial Enterprise Network.
Network, so that's where it came from.
Sustainable or social?
Social, but with the division of obviously looking at regenerative technologies and circular economy approach to how we can, you know, satisfy our needs in that direction. So it's sustainable is part of that, yeah, definitely.
So the foundation is really to set up a place, a space, or spaces where people can come together and tell their stories and tell them to each other. And the foundation will facilitate the telling of those stories. So whether it's commissioning someone to go out and do a documentary or interviews, collect historical photographs or arrange an exhibition, whatever, the foundation will be the coordinator of it, and it will also be the repository of all of the knowledge and wisdom that we will collect.
It's kind of like a historical society, except it's one that's not only in the past, but it's in the present and the future. And
yes.
Rather than just collecting stuff, you're actually looking to change. think, well, by yes, the sound of it. That's my picture, at least.
As soon as anyone talks about, say, a museum or something like that, to me, I get this image of sort of beetles stuck with a pin behind a glass cabinet, so everything in it's dead, whereas we're talking about something that's living. And we're, that's fundamentally where we seem to have got our society, that we're actually creating or we're now, in effect, a dead society because we've taken all the people, all the living characteristics out of that. So I talk about it, we've been corporatized, monetized, and atomized. So by dealing with corporations, they're not people. What we want to do is have people talking to people, dealing with people again. You mentioned government earlier. Well, government's not a person. We don't need government. Government should be there to serve us as people. And what we're really trying to set up is a place where we can just sit down and as natural, free human beings, just talk to each other.
Mm. Living and evolving.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful that we can do that in collaboration with Radio Adelaide, because it's a ideal. It's sort of ideal in many ways, because we're in the same. We're talking about the same region, the Tandanyanga region, and it's just logical. It just makes a lot of sense that we form that collaboration, and we will have lots of other collaborations, and we have plans for them, which perhaps we'll have a music break and we can talk about them after the break.
You're listening to Radio Adelaide. A Persian program will be up next at about 3 o'clock, but right now it's a piece of the action. We've got Sam and Ed in the studio, along with Sue Gilby, Clayton in the hot seat, asking all of the most difficult and unlearned questions, because I've already started this process of unlearning that we've been talking about, evidently. We're talking about the Scene Foundation, which is starting, I believe, around... They've got an opportunity to start around the east end of Adelaide, and we've heard...
If we get the Royal Adelaide Hospital site.
Mm. So there's a potentially focus for it in one of the heritage-listed parts of the Royal Adelaide site. But we're talking about partnership. The organisation is talking about positive community people connections. And part of that is also, I presume, organisational connections. So collecting people under your umbrella, but also connecting to other umbrellas.
Hmm. And Do you want me to add to that?
Who would be natural partners?
Well, there's anyone, and there's numerous organisations and enterprises, businesses, existing businesses that we feel have a more of a social consideration, that they really want to improve our society, in a sense they want to feedback and reinvest, and so, and the Scene, the social enterprise or entrepreneurial enterprise network, is about linking in those organizations and social enterprises or businesses that are already have a very active role in community, and would maybe like to link in with others in a manner that will help to enhance them achieving their own objectives already. So it's like Sue said earlier, each of us has a piece of the puzzle. Each of us has a piece of the understanding. And collectively, we may be able to create the vision, the story that attracts us, touches our hearts, and believe that it will provide insights into what we need to do next. And so, I mean, there's a whole... I didn't bring my list of names, but... there's, I don't know, Sue, if you can you mention the name?
Well, we don't need to be specific, but there's, it's all in keeping with the whole concept of regeneration. And so any organisation or any small business that wants to base itself with us, that follows those principles of regeneration and is about working towards a sustainable future, we'd be happy for them to either be a base that they can operate from or more. I mean, whichever way that people want to look at it. And we've already got a couple of organisations that are quite large that are proposing that they make their Adelaide base with us, and that's Polis Plan. And they're visiting us at the moment, and people can look up their organisation and some of their information on a beautility site. It's a combination of the word beauty and utility, which I think is very clever. Mm-hmm. So you can look that up and just have a look at what Polis Plan are all about. And there's the Global Eco Village Network have indicated interest, and there's a whole lot of people that are involved in ecotourism that are also quite keen to be involved with us. So it's an evolving thing. It's growing.
And also existing businesses, it could relate to food co-ops through to people who are manufacturing or generating service or products that relate to improving the health and well-being of our community. And
quite clearly we can't have the actual have them all operating from there, but they can have a base there, they can have a meeting space there and go out, and the whole idea is that it does evolve, it does grow, and it does extend to any organisation anywhere that has sustainability as their focus.
And also to tell their story and to share
their story.
The radio program, because a lot of people may not be aware of what's going on. And so it's just a way that people can realise we're not alone and that we can achieve a lot more if we come together.
Well, more than just collecting stories, we actually are looking to provide what I see as a safe harbour, a place where all these individual social enterprises, where these organisations can gather. And nowadays it doesn't have to be in a physical place. We can do everything virtually and online, etc. But we actually provide a space where people can come to us and say, hey, I want to set up a sustainable food cooperative. Well, we'll have the resources, the knowledge, the expertise to help that person set up their food co-op in whatever region, the local region where they're operating. So we actually become more than just a library or a repository of information. We want to be actively out there talking and working with the people who are wanting to do actually change things and create a new reality on the ground. We can actually provide direct support, whether it's knowledge, whether it's resources, and in fact, you know, we've got ideas about funding models too, because ultimately a lot of these enterprises, great ideas, everyone wants to do it, but where am I going to get the money from?
Yeah.
There are now quite a number of socially responsible, community-based fundraising activities that we can engage in, and we again see ourselves as being a place where people can come and we say, yes, we can support you in your activity.
And the story can be in any form, can't it? It can be a play. It can be it can be artwork. Mm. Stories are limited only by your imagination.
Yeah. Well, building a social enterprise is a story in itself.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's I actually think it's really quite an exciting project and has a lot of merit. Just in the fact that it's there's never such a thing as a complete story, because the story is always growing. But we're capturing, I think, something that is much more holistic than has been previously captured, I think.
Mm. Well, it's part of it as a philosophy, isn't it? As anybody will, you know, talk about history, in the history of wars, it's the winners that usually write the history, but any history is written with a perspective, with a philosophy that underlies it. And what you're saying is that you're going to start looking at those sorts of things, but with fresh eyes, with a different mindset to extract what you want out of it and to highlight.
And
very much advised by Indigenous wisdom, very much advised. It's an imperative that we listen, and that's probably something that hasn't happened enough of too.
And the first step, is like Sue indicated earlier, assuming we do get the invite for occupying that building on the old Royal Adelaide site, is to focus on the East End and then to find out their story and hopefully through that to to link it in with the not only the place but the intention of the various businesses and how they would like to, improve their own connectedness and how we can help in that process and spread the word, yeah, either through ecotourism approach and other opportunities.
That East End was the original marketplace for Adelaide, and I did a story collection for Central Market and did one with this man who I think is 86, and he tells the story of, as a young boy, going down on a horse and cart with loads and loads of apples. And he started when he was about six, going down at 2 o'clock in the morning to the East End to drop off these apples and then coming back and going to school. And his story, you know, there's people still alive that can tell those stories, and wow, they need to be told.
Hmm.
That's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, and to me, these stories, it's not about living in the past. It's about saying there's something that was captured at that time that through the evolution of our city, we've lost. And is there a way, and maybe from an Indigenous or Aboriginal approach, is there's a spirit to the place, and that spirit is something that the Indigenous of the time, they were able to communicate and link in with that to enable them to live for thousands of years. So there's something our cities need to recapture, and how we go forward. I don't have the answers. Not saying we have the answers, but as a collective, we can work towards the solutions.
You don't have to have answers to make positive progress.
Yes.
You can always improve things. Well, it's true.
It's true.
I get scared when people say, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and we've got all the answers and we've got it all sorted. Utopia is around the corner, and I'm thinking, oh, sure. Yeah, so it's delusion.
Exactly.
Well, it's old story, you know, the path of 1,000 miles begins with the first step, and then the other one I like is you create the path by walking on it.
Yeah.
So,
and it's always have a common intention. That's what, to me, what the story provides.
Yeah.
And you tell a terrific story, the goose story. Do you want to tell that?
Well, that was a story I was told by Miss McCoy, the Indian woman, when I was about 8 years old, and I asked her people, they're part of the Iroquois tribe in Canada, and I asked her how her people used to live. And, you know, if we were asked, Ed, how did you used to live? Well, I had a car, lived in a house, went to school. Anyway, she told me the goose story. And in Canada, most people may or may not know, the geese, they fly south for the winter and north for the summer, and they always fly in V formation. And we know scientifically they can fly 71% further in V formation than if they were to fly alone. And it doesn't mean they can't fly alone. They can, but they choose to come together. And part of the efficiency is due to the ones behind. They honk to encourage the leader. They have the aerodynamic aspect that most people, like bicycle riders, take advantage of. And the leader, if it gets tired, it honks, and they trade leadership role. And one of the most beautiful aspects, and this is true, they had to be incredible observers of nature to model their community on this. And if one of the geese gets sick and has to drop out, at least two other geese stays with it, and they either wait until it dies or recovers, and they rejoin another flock going in the same direction. And anyway, that's how our people used to live. And I didn't quite understand it at the time, but it's not until I lived and worked in Papua New Guinea for 5 years that it came to life for me. But that's another story.
It's all about stories, isn't
but,
it?
Yeah, but that,
so
that
many
story.
Stories.
And there's a number of organizations, the Gaia Foundation, they've adopted that story as their logo and sort of a vision of where they would like to head toward.
That's a much nicer story than I can remember about Canadian gooses, who on the ground tend to be very territorial and quite aggressive.
Oh, they do too. Well, so do we.
Yes, well, exactly. So do we.
But you contrast that with the story that we now tell ourselves in, I'll call it, Western society, and that
and this is part of the unlearning. So the story now is growth is absolutely essential, that more growth is better, that everything's in terms of money, so that you're going to be better off if you have more money and so you can buy more things. So that's the story we're telling ourselves, we're telling our kids, we're telling everyone else.
That'll make you happy.
Yes, you'll be happy. You know, go and get the second BMW.
Is there any evidence, actually, for that? It's one of the questions that need to be asked.
Yeah.
Well, no, it isn't. I mean, rates of suicide are going up, obesity, depression. I mean, all the evidence is there that it's totally the wrong way to go. But we just keep headlong down that path.
Yeah.
And it was that whole concept, wasn't it, that got this.
That's where we started from
together.
Yeah.
In the first place, and you two started it.
Well, it was already going, Sue. We were inspired by the Inspira model out of New Zealand. They're a self-managed organization, and they felt that people weren't being satisfied through meaningful occupations, and they said, "Well, let's get together. How can we create a network that's self-managed, that's not a burden on people, and that they can use their collective knowledge and understanding to not only work on projects, but look at social enterprises?" And so we were blessed to realize that there's models out there, and we wanted to really bring it into the consciousness of Adelaide, because there's some wonderful things happening in Adelaide. Looking at social enterprises, that the government's involved, and the Don Dunson Foundation has created funding to help pursue this even further, so that because there's successful models looking at that, by investing within our own society, we can improve the health and well-being, and maybe they didn't use the word nurturing, but it could be a way that we can head towards a more nurturing and caring society.
Well, I just read this morning, actually, I'm not sure where it was, but the government's new battery is going to be duplicated and spread. They're talking about a whole pile of solar cells and solar batteries on the houses of housing trust houses in Adelaide, which will obviously save the occupants some money, but will actually provide a big battery for the whole state.
Well, the government is using the words like regenerative technologies and circular economy as well. So it's just a matter of us in the community to say, well, is this the direction we want to go? Because the real leaders, I think, are us in the community, and we influence the politicians.
Well, we could take a step out of the U.S. Constitution. We the people is
yes,
how it starts.
100% agreed.
Mm.
Yeah. And we want to encourage anybody that wants to be part of it, of this. And it is something that's evolving, but it's also something that is very timely. And I think there's a lot of people that are starting to, you know, figuratively speaking, wake up and look around and think there's something going really wrong here. We need to do it differently. And certainly when we've started this, this network, we've met with a lot of people that have all agreed.
Agreed.
Things need to change.
So we're in the process of possibly very soon setting up a Facebook site for this particular project to enable people to get more information and involve themselves, basically, if they choose.
And if there's anybody listening that wants to get involved, they can ring Radio Adelaide and get put through to one of myself get put through to myself, and I can share it with everyone else.
Sue doesn't live here, but she is contactable through here.
Yeah, Sue's well known.
Well, no, they are collaborating with us after all.
No, I'm just saying, you know, if you ring up and say, "What, Sue Gilby's not here right now."
No, I meant ring Radio Adelaide, and they'll put you on. They'll give my number.
Yeah.
Yep, to contact.
There you go. If you're in a similar place that Mick Jagger was back a few decades ago when he wrote that, maybe talking about this Scene Foundation.
Satisfaction. That's what we all want. We all want to get some satisfaction. But we're planning on setting up a foundation as such, isn't it? And Sam, can you give a bit of a a talk from your perspective on a foundation and what it is and how it operates?
Foundations are a particular type of corporation, so they are a company, but they're a not-for-profit, and people can become members of the foundation, similar to being a shareholder in a company, except no one has rights to dividend or to extract money out of the foundation. The foundation exists to further its purposes, which in our case, simply put, are to collect and tell everyone's stories. And all of the resources and efforts of the foundation go towards helping and promoting those activities. And any surplus that's generated out of our activities is reinvested back into the foundation to continue its work.
So just for the listener, what's the difference between a foundation and a cooperative?
A cooperative is probably more like a business enterprise. It's a way of setting up a business. So a group of people might be producers, grape growers, orange growers. In fact, in South Australia, the Riverland has a long, strong history of cooperatives. They get together to pool their resources, produce and provide their goods and services. Mm. And
I like Farmers Union.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was originally a union. It was a co-op, Farmers Union Co-op Limited.
Yeah.
And the essential difference with a co-op is it's a way for people to get together to carry out their enterprise. People don't actually have jobs as such. They are not only working in the co-op, but they are also part owners of the co-op. So everyone shares in the work and effort and resources that go into produce whatever goods or services come from the co-op, and in turn they all share in the surplus or the wealth generated by that activity. So it is again the circle. It's all reinvested, all comes back to the same place and then gets reused again. And at that point, it is sustainable. It just keeps going. Mm. We're not trying to build something that just grows in a straight line ad infinitum, because eventually it just dies.
And is it hierarchical?
No, well, you can set it up any way you like, really, in terms of structure, but because every person who works in it or is involved with it is a member, it's one member, one vote, so you can't have a Rupert Murdoch coming in and saying, I'm going to buy 51% of the shares and I'm going to tell everyone else what to do. Everyone gets one vote. It doesn't matter how many shares they own or what percentage.
So it makes it very flat.
It does. And usually it's like Ed's goose story. You basically have a rotating leadership. Or, you know, if a particular project or something needs to be done, you look around and say, who's the best person equipped to do that? And for the period of that project, they may be the team leader. But you don't actually... You can if you want to, but most people, if you give them a chance, set up and say, well, we don't actually want bosses. Mm. We'll come in. We can organise ourselves, thanks very much. Mm. At the end of the day, we're all adults. We should be able to organise ourselves. Mm. You know, we don't need a boss to come and tell us what to do.
Well, especially when you're in a position where you're doing something that you want to do.
That's right.
It's a matter of a team all pulling together as such.
And the thing, Clayton, is that there's models out there that works. Inspiro is one. Socialcratic governance model is another one for decision making and conflict resolution, and that's been around for a number of years now. And there's ongoing support to ensure others who want to go down that pathway can quite readily be informed intelligently to be able to put that into practice. So.
That's another one of the things we have to unlearn. We just assume this is the way. This corporate hierarchies and structures, they were all invented. They were invented about 100, 150 years ago as the Industrial Revolution took place, and as a mean to control and extract the value from all of us. We don't have to live that way. Well, we have to unlearn it.
I think in the past, they did describe the things that we worked with as our resources and our people as our people. And, you know, but these days, of course, we're all just in the same boat. We're all just resources. I think that's just it's awful.
Human resources. I mean, that's
atrocious.
It's an oxymoron. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Human resources, But we do have to generate an income as well, don't we?
Yes, definitely.
So just to be part of, just to function in our society, we have to be... have income. So yes. That fits well within a foundation.
It does, and it fits more within the social enterprise cooperative.
Yeah.
And the focus is on people's needs, not their wants. So we will focus on providing food, how we grow and produce food.
Housing.
Housing, clothing.
Energy.
Energy.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, if we provide all of those things to people, you actually don't need money. Because most of the money we think we need is to go off and buy stuff that we actually don't need, but we've been brainwashed into thinking we do need.
Yeah, you don't need as much money, that's true.
We mentioned Polisplan before, and they're very strong advocates for the circular economy, which is very much what you're talking about, Sam, isn't it? And
yes.
They're having a meeting at Christie Walk 105 Sturt Street on the 16th, on Friday the 16th at 6:30, and they will be talking about what it is that they want to achieve, and the fact that they're setting up they'll set up a base wherever we go with our story.
Well, the one of the great things with the Polis Plan is they actually have a plan. They actually a lot of people, we can have great conversations and everyone say, oh, yes, I wish it was like this, but they're actually saying, no, here's some specific concrete things we can help you do to move to the new vision, the new way of doing things, what our new story can be.
Yes. Yeah.
And they're working with local councils, and I believe local councils is the appropriate level of government for us to work with, because it all comes, community is local. It has to be done at a local level. And, yeah, they're if you have a look at their website, you'll just see the sort of things they're doing. But really, what it is quite beautiful, actually.
It is, yeah. And they're looking for funding at the moment, but they've actually got a go-ahead from one council, haven't they, to implement some of their plans, which is fantastic. They're Stephen Liaros and Nilmini De Silva. And they're wonderful people with a really good plan and a really good focus. And they were so much a part of the everyday life in Sydney, both working for local government as an engineer and a town planner. And they sold up everything, bought a mobile home, and they travel around talking to people who listen to them.
Yeah.
And people are listening.
So people who might be interested, could they, if they could provide their email to Radio Adelaide, we could send them out an invite? No.
They could just turn up.
Just turn up.
Okay.
Yeah, just turn up.
So that's February 16th.
February 16th, Friday, February the 16th at 5:30 at 105 Sturt Street.
Yeah.
Can I do a couple of other news and what's on?
So
we've got Society of Friends, the Quakers, have got Nicholas McGeorge on Thursday the 15th of February, 7 p.m. in the Friends Meeting House, 40A Pennington Street. He's retired chief prison psychologist from the UK, and he's also been working most recently in the US, establishing circles of support and accountability in a number of states. So he's talking, and that sounds of interest in justice, restorative justice, and helping people to actually make a better life. Sounds like a good one. You're also invited to hear Marge Pistorius, one of the Pine Gap Peace Pilgrims. She's going to be speaking on the 28th of February. And come along to the Depot Cafe and the Joinery in Franklin Street between 10 and noon on the 28th and join the conversation. So that's a general invitation for the 28th of Feb. And the Australian-Cuba Friendship Association has some meetings coming up, and there's a 35th National Consultation on the 7th and 8th of April. So if you're interested in that, I'm sure if you get in touch with the Australia-Cuba Friendship Society in South Australia, you'll find out all you need to know to get along to that one. We are just about
Thanks for coming in. It was really good.
Thank you for having
Thank you for the opportunity. Yeah.
We're going to leave you with You Can't Always Get What You Want, which I thought was just about introduced earlier.